Blog Talk Radio.
The myth. Definition of a band.
Welcome to the Nation Billing, where we do it right. Tonight's topic is Nation Billing Presents Divorce Part 3. And here's your host, Sister Gidget. What's up, Sister Gidget?
Assalamu alaikum, DJ Black Caesar. How are you?
Walaikum salam, sister. I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
I am well, by Allah's permission, and I'm delightful to be here tonight. Let me ask you before we begin, did we have the opportunity to get everyone on the phone?
I think so.
Okay, so I know Brother McHale is supposed to be calling from a different number. So, Brother McHale, if you're out there, please press 1 on your keypad so DJ Black Caesar can make your mic live and we can begin. Okay, let's get started. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. I bear witness that the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan is our divine reminder, and I greet you all, my distinguished panel, as well as the listening audience, in our nation's greeting words of peace. As-salamu alaykum.
Alaykum salam.
Alaykum salam.
All right. Thank you. Okay, we had some technical difficulties on Blog Talk, and then, of course, you know, me not being a technocrat, I messed up my whole computer, deprogrammed it, so I can't see anything tonight. So I'm going to ask who's all on the line, and I know Brother Walter, who is the founder of this topic. I'm going to always call him out. I'm going to allow Brother Walter to come down front and center. So to introduce yourself.
I'm Lincoln family. It's Brother Walter. Once again, I'm thankful by Allah's grace and to Sister Gidget and Nation Building family for the opportunity again. Brother Walter W. Muhammad at Facebook. Been in the nation for 16 years. Mainly out of the city of Philadelphia, currently in the city study group of Willenboro, New Jersey. And I'm just gracious to be here. And you know, by Allah's grace, hopeful that we can help or you know learn as well how to handle this thing called divorce. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. And thank you, Brother Walter. And your queen, your wife, Sister Sinquetta Muhammad, front and center soldier. As-salamu
alaikum. Wa alaikum salam, ma'am, and I would like to say good evening to the panel and also to the listening audience. My next question is Sinquetta Muhammad. I've been in the nation for 20 years. I'm currently at the study group out of Willenboro, New Jersey, and I have been married before, divorced, and I am remarried to a wonderful, wonderful FOI, Brother Walter.
All praises due to Allah. Okay, and we have a new couple with us for the first time, and I know that Brother Khalil is on the phone. I don't know if Sister Sincere is here, but Brother Khalil, as-salamu alaykum, sir, front and center, so to introduce yourself.
Wa alaykum salam, sister. This is Brother Khalil, and yes, my wife, Queen Sincere Muhammad, is here with me. I myself have been in the nation since 1991 is when I started studying and coming into the nation. Got my ex in 1993 out of Washington, D.C. Born and raised in Chicago, Illinois. Spent about 6 years in the United States Navy. And I want to thank you, sister, for having me and my wife on this show this evening. My wife is here as well.
All praises due to Allah. Thank you, Brother Khalil, for so graciously accepting the request. And come down front and center, Queen Sincere, and introduce yourself to us.
As-salamu alaykum, family. This is Sincere. This is Sincere Muhammad. I've been in the nation since 1991. I have taken time off because of my ex-husband. But by the grace of Allah and his mercy, I was able to come back and get my ex in 2007. And we've been working in the ranks ever since. And Allah has truly blessed me now with this new husband who is my FOI. And I thank Allah for him. And I thank you, sister, for inviting us on as well.
All praises to Allah, Queen, and thank you as well as your husband for graciously accepting. And DJ Black Caesar, we also had Sister Patricia. She's supposed to have been calling in. Sister Patricia, if you are out there, please press 1 on your keypad. She's area code 216. And I think Brother Mikhail is 602. So if you see any of those, are they here?
I'm here.
I'm here.
Okay,
as well.
Who is I'm here? Is that Brother Mikhail?
Yes, man, it's Brother Mikhail.
Assalamu alaikum. Come down front and center, soldier. Introduce yourself.
Wa alaikum salam, Brother Mikhail. Been in the nation since 1992. Married 12 years, divorced, remarried. So just your brother. That's all.
And unfortunately, his queen, Sister Najima, could not be with us tonight, but he is such a strong FOI. He going to represent for both parties. All praise is due to Allah. Thank you, brother. And you know, he always messes with me about how I pronounce his name, but tonight your name is Brother Mikhail. Okay.
Yes,
okay. And did we get Sister Patricia, DJ Black Caesar, area code 216?
Yes, ma'am, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. All praises to Allah. Assalamu alaikum, Queen, front and center. Introduce yourself.
Yes, ma'am. This is Sister Patricia Muhammad from Cleveland, Ohio. I was on a previous show about divorce. I've been in the nation since 1991 as well, and I was married for 28 years, and I am now divorced.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. I think that is everyone, and if I missed anyone, please let me know, because like I said, I can't access my computer, and that's what I use to kind of monitor myself and the program, so we're just going to play it by ear tonight. Okay. I know that when we last left off, Brother Walter, I know we dabbled in child support, and for those of you who are joining us for the first time, this is part three and the conclusion of a show that we simply titled Divorce, and we did before, during, and after. So now we at the after part. And so, Brother Walter, we've gotten the divorce, and tell us about the child support. We dabbled in that last time, but I don't think we went into great detail. And the reason why I'm asking that, because oftentimes what we didn't get into is that when child support has been established after the divorce, and whether it's child support or even alimony or whatever, is that a deterrent for a man who is considering later on to remarry because of the previous financial obligation? Is that a reason that they hold back as far as, you know, talk amongst the FOI? What do you think, Brother Walter?
Yes, ma'am. That's a wonderful question. And to be honest with you, in my situation, that was always an issue with me, because I definitely didn't want to, go into a new marriage like kind of in a handicapped situation where, you know, you have to, you know, as a man, try to provide for your children, your previous children, as best you can. But at the same time, you feel the obligation to, you know, provide in your current, you know, situation, you know, if you remarry. So, you know, that definitely can cause some problems if not, you know, properly planned and understood by, you know, the two that are coming together, the male and the female coming together, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, that could, anytime you split those finances, it takes on a whole other dynamic. So, yeah, it's definitely something to consider. Now, a lot of times you will have a sister who accepts that situation and, you know, can even sometimes make up for the, you know, compensate for, you know, the lacking of bringing in finances to the marriage. So, you know, it's all based on, you know, the understanding that I think the two have from my vantage point.
Yes, sir. And Brother Khalil, we don't know too much about, you know, your history. Brother Mikhail has been here before as well as Brother Walter, but since this is your first time, kind of give us a rundown, Brother Khalil, about you and your marital situation.
Well, with me and my marital situation, you know, I wasn't previously married, you know, so to speak, and, you know, as we know, legally married. But, you know, I was in a relationship for about 4 years before, you know, I eventually, you know, met my wife. So, you know, I considered that as a marriage as well. You know, we weren't legally married, but, you know, that was my significant other. And so, you know, I met my wife, you know, in 2007, and we ended up, you know, being friends, and we eventually got married, you know, just recently, maybe about August of 2000, what? 2010, yes, August 2010. And so it's been great. But as far as, you know, when you deal and talk about child support, since I had no children, my son unfortunately passed prematurely in a previous relationship. He was premature and he died about 2 days old. So as far as child support or coming into a marriage with children and having to deal with that, I could not specifically speak to that instance. You know, my wife has children, so she would definitely be, you know, more apt and more capable of talking about that kind of situation and coming into a marriage or relationship with children, and that you have to, you know, deal with that kind of financial responsibility and how the man is going to deal with you, you know, coming into a relationship, you know, with previous children from a previous relationship.
Yes, sir. Okay, and I guess I asked the brothers because usually, of course, the brothers are the ones that end up paying all the time. So I'm going to go to Brother Mikhail. Brother Mikhail, was that something that you considered as a downside to remarrying?
A downside to remarrying if that sister had child support on a brother?
No, if you were paying child support, don't you have children?
Yes.
From a previous marriage, I'm sorry.
Oh no, not from a previous marriage. I lost.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
The brother, I lost. My wife lost twice. Ex-wife at the time.
Oh. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll turn to the sisters. Okay, sisters. Okay, I want to pronounce your name correctly, Sister Sunsiri.
Yes, that's it. That's right. Perfect.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Okay, so, you know, I know that wasn't your situation, but I just want to know from a sister's standpoint. I know it's kind of after the fact now, but just say hypothetically, you met a brother and he was previously married, maybe for a long time. He had 5 or 6 children. He had this massive amount of child support to pay. But, you know, love endures all things. Is that a deal breaker?
If he had five or six, yeah, that would be a deal breaker. That's just honest. But, you know, my ex-husband actually, when I... I'm sorry. I just keep it real. When I met my ex-husband, he had just found out that his girlfriend from college was pregnant. So I was with him through the whole, and she was down in D.C., and I was with him from the beginning while we were dating for 5 years. And I knew of the expenses that he had for him, but, you know, he was an intelligent brother as far as maintaining a job and supporting him. So he even sent support while the sister was pregnant with his son. And, you know, now his son is like 21, 22 years old, and, you know, it stopped. But, you know, it was money that was taken out of our income, you know, while we were there. But I always kept a job to make sure that money that we lost was always brought back into the house. Even when after I had my children, I would always go back and work part-time. Now, 5 or 6 children, I don't think I could do that unless the brother I seen that he was working really, really hard. But that would be strenuous on me to do that.
Okay. And Sister Cinquetta, what about you? Would that be a deal breaker?
No, it wasn't a deal breaker. But what it is, I think that, you know, with any woman that's about to marry someone who has children from a previous relationship and they do pay child support, you have to really be honest with yourself to see, you know, is this something that I can really handle? And you also want to be honest to make sure that you're not putting yourself in a situation that would be worse than what you're already in. So I think if you could be honest with yourself, you know what you need to make things, you know, happen for yourself. And you and that your mate have to come together as well and figure out the best way that you all can handle your finances. And I think, you know, if people can do that, then it would be okay.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. And Sister Patricia, who is single and searching, so single and seeking, I guess. Sister Patricia, would you consider a brother who had massive child support? Maybe he had 3, 4, 5 children child support to pay. Would that be a deal breaker for you, Queen?
Well, I would say probably, only because my children are adults and I'm of the age where, not that I can't raise any more children, but I believe it's my time to enjoy life. And not that I don't enjoy children, but I raised my children. And if a brother has children and they're adults, that's no problem.
Oh, okay. All right. All right, we're gonna make a note of that. She's looking for an old man. Okay, there you go. I'm just joking. Okay, so now let's talk about consistency, though, because oftentimes what I have seen happen, and which is very unfortunate for the children, because we're going to talk about the children now, we're going to talk about parental involvement. I don't think parents don't know, but I don't think parents address the issue of the sudden impact of that parent being out of the home. And so I want to ask each of you who's had that experience of when that separation happened, you know, and usually, of course, it's prior to divorce, is there an agreement, or should, in your opinion, should there be an agreement where the parent who is going to be moving outside of the home remain consistently visiting the child until the child can adjust to that variation in a schedule of where they're not seeing their father, not seeing their mother each day? Because usually what happens, it happens abruptly. You know, the father leaves, and listen, I'm just throwing it out there, not always, but I'm just saying the father leaves, him and the mother are arguing. He might stay gone a week. He might stay gone 2 weeks. And, you know, the children really kind of suffer in silence because the mate is at a point where, you know, it's not feasible for them to be together anymore. But how do you comfort your children in that aspect? And I'm going to go to Sister Sunseri.
Well, being that, you know, I was married for 13 years, almost 14, to their father, and we were together 6 years before that. So we were together in total 20 years. And, you know, it wasn't in our case, it was not the fact of him moving out. It was the fact I went to Atlanta to start a new life for us. And once I got down there, he decided when it was time for me to come back and get the children that he didn't want the marriage anymore. So I was kind of like duped in a sense, but I thank Allah for that trial. And it was hard because I had already set everything up in Atlanta, and I was driving back and forth every month. Even before that happened, I was driving home every month and maintaining my job as well. So once, you know, I couldn't come back into the home, I went back down south, and for a year I was coming back like every 2-3 months and going through the trial dates. So with my children, it was kind of hard for them because their father was constantly trying to keep them from me and keep them from Islam. And as much as he could, he would. So I just maintained with them that I love them. I didn't leave you. You know, this is what happened. And they knew what happened. So they were hurt. They were really, really hurt. And even to this day, they still get counsel for it because of other situations that has happened. But, you know, they went through it, and they're still
up until recently, they went through it a lot. And they cried. They didn't want me to leave. They wanted to be with me. So I made the choice at the end of the divorce to come back to Buffalo so that we have shared custody. So seeing we live 10 minutes away from each other and we do have split time with the children, it was working for them for a moment. But now that their father is going to be remarrying a woman who they are not fond of, it's become a major, major issue. And so now I have to keep letting them know, you know, that mommy's here, you know, Brother Khalil is here, and we love you, and we just want you to be happy. So when they come here, I let them vent. I let them get off their chest, whatever it is, and then we wipe the slate clean, and then we keep it positive. So that's how I handle it. And then I just feed them good bean soup and bean pie, and they're happy.
Hey, that works every time. Okay, DJ Black Caesar, I think we lost Sister Cinquetta. Can we try to get her back?
I'm here.
Oh,
hello?
Okay, okay, I thought your phone dropped. Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
Okay, so Sister Cinquetta, what about your situation? I mean, was it abrupt for your children that the father was absent, and how did you handle that? Or how did they handle that?
Well, in my situation, fortunately, we were able to still be civil enough and not put our feelings, you know, in the forefront and negate our children's feelings. So what we did was, you know, even though we had separated, and of course, we told the children, he still remained in their life. He would still pick them up. He would still come see them on a regular basis. And, you know, it was a little hard because he wasn't actually living in the home, but they did see him a lot throughout the week. And, you know, as the separation went on, you know, like I said in the in part two, he wound up getting them for 6 months out of the year. And I had them for 6 months out of the year. So they still really, you know, shared a lot of time with myself as well as him.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, and Brother Walter?
Yes, ma'am, I'm here.
Okay, so was it abrupt for you and your children?
Yeah, it was abrupt. It started off for me, you know, trying to really maintain that consistency as you spoke of and, you know, trying to stay active to keep that balance. But, you know, one of the dynamics that you take on as a man, of course, is, and I'm sure women as well, but I'm just speaking from a man's point of view, when you're providing, you know, income into another household and then trying to provide for your own household, that takes on a whole dynamic of time and energy. And a lot of times many of us are, you know, blessed to have, you know, $150,000 salaries and so forth and so on. So we try to do the best we can, but we find ourselves financially strapped, taking on, having to take on another job or, you know, part-time work or even another full-time job. And I found myself with a lot of the things that were going on through the divorce as far as property settlement and child support and everything piling up. Taking on another full-time job on top of a full-time job. So it became very hectic time-wise. And when, you know, you begin to do that at that pace, then when you do have the time off, it's kind of like when you do get the children, it's like, all right, y'all going over there and play and, you know, just let me get my rest. And, you know, it just gets kind of, you know, tiresome at a certain point if you're living like that. But I think the best-case scenario is to try to be able to sit down and work something out, but it's not always the reality. So for me, you know, it became kind of very difficult, extremely difficult.
Okay. And Brother Mikhail?
Yes, ma'am.
I know your situation is different, but on behalf of Sister Najima, as far as you know, was that situation abrupt? Because I know you and I had a conversation about some things that went on, but how did that impact the children or the child?
It actually impacts in reverse because my wife's ex was never in the child's life. I've been in her life since she was two, and so it's all she has known is me. So it was actually in reverse. And so there wasn't no abruptness because she was too young to even know, and he was never in that life. And he, when he tries to, you know, every 6-7 weeks or so on the phone, it's more distressing for her, you know. And so it's in reverse. It's actually in reverse. So I'm always talking to her and whatnot when she talks to that, because all she knows is me, Daddy. And when she spent time with him, he was trying to tell her, you know, well, I'm the stepdad, which is true, but not to her. And she vigorously fought that. And so what it does is, for his point of view, he's going to have to build a bridge to her. I know it may feel like that's something you shouldn't do, because that's your seed, but you got to cultivate that seed. You just cannot pop in and say, I'm the biological. So for her, if you press against me or, you know, put me in a different light, she fights that, and she does that. Because I've been in her life ever since she was 2 years old. And when I was courting my wife, every time I was on the phone with my wife, I was on the phone with her, the little one. And we would do ABCs and 1-2-3s. We would do this every day, literally. So all she knows is
uh-huh.
So for his vantage point, you know, he may call, you know, once every 6 weeks, spend no more than a minute on the phone with her. That's not gonna build the relationship that you want to have, and that's not gonna edge me out either. I'm like in the place where you should be. So he's in a precarious situation. But I'm just telling you from my observation of the little one. That you gotta be delicate if you got children. And your parents, I mean, your wife, ex-wife, or whatever, remarries, you have to make sure you're in that child's life so you hold your rightful position, because it's a unique situation when you're not in that life and then someone supplants you, and then you're trying to get there, and the child in question is not letting you there, because to them it looks like you're trying to replace somebody that all they know is. So my situation is very different. That's my first time experiencing that. I do say, if you have children and you get remarried, make sure you in their life, because I couldn't imagine being supplanted if it was me. I don't even like that idea. Unfortunately, not by purpose, but this is my wife, this is my family. I'm here every day. But I build a relationship with the little one. And so when the father biological tries to do anything that looks like that's going to move me out the way, little one fights that. She rebels against that. We actually have to talk to her about that. We let her express how she feels about it, but it is a unique situation. So that's my experience regarding that. It's just reversed from what mostly happens.
Yes, sir. Okay, so let's talk about the bitterness, though. I'm going to start back with you, Brother Mikhail, because, you know, I know that this doesn't happen all the time, and especially us who have, you know, the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, you know, not to put down anyone, but there's just an elevated thinking that takes place in all of our lives, in every situation. So, but, you know, sometimes there is bitterness, and sometimes we can't help but display that bitterness, you know, that we feel towards our mate during that anger stage when we're so distraught about the relationship. And so, Brother Mikhail, you know, I don't know about your first marriage, but since I know there were no children there, but, you know, the children do pick up on your emotional state. And sometimes, not everyone, so I'm putting a disclaimer out there, sometimes, you know, we have conversations because we need to vent. And sometimes our children overhear us say terrible things about the other, you know, spouse or whatever. And that also impacts the children. So how do you deal, or how did you deal, if any of you had any bitterness? And I'm going to start with you, Brother Mikhail, because I know we had that conversation as well.
Well, in my situation with my wife, I didn't have to. all I had to do was put a clean glass next to the children, because the children, unfortunately, saw my wife's ex, you know, abuse her physically. So that was something they never saw from me. But there was always that glass. They saw how I related to them, how I interacted with them, and they were able to make themselves comparisons. So, I mean, you're going to win most 100% of the time if they saw the mother being abused, and then here comes another guy, never even come close to that type of thing. So with the children, they were able to see that, and they were able to make comparisons. Unfortunately, in dealing with my wife, he's very bitter. And so for whatever reason, you know, I would even limit my wife's communication with him, because he would threaten her via email, whatnot. And see, that just ain't going to happen under my watch. And we've already had a confrontation in which, you know, that showed me the type of dude he was. Very scary. But, you know, you're just not going to do that. The marriage is over. You're gone. There ain't going to be no type of threats, no type of anything. And my wife, if she was wrong in what she, if she provoked that, you know, I'd have been on her. And she know that. She never provoked that type of stuff. So it's for whatever reason, she's moved on with her life. And she's in another marriage. She's gone. For him, it's probably hard or whatever. So we have not had a civil discourse. So I try to make her, you know, just limit as much as possible. You know, he's Tony Tough Guy over the phone, but when you're in person, it's a whole nother story. And unfortunately, I wish we didn't have to go that route, but it's not me that's doing that. I'm very civil, and if we believers, you know, we reason on that. But I mean, I'm not going to take on the chin you just talking to my wife any type of way just because, or you wish she would die, or you hate her and stuff like that. And these are things that I actually said, and my wife is good people. So for whatever reason, you know, that ain't even your place no more. What is your place is your daughter. So whatever the your expenses is, whatever you need to take care of when it comes to her, you need to build a relationship with, that's your concern. Najma, not your concern no more. So it's unfortunate because, like I said, we have these teachings. You would think we can be civil about it, but we become niggling sometimes when emotion get in play. And I've seen it. And I try not, I tell my wife, sometimes, you know, when I'm thinking to self and I'm venting to her, I'm like, see, if I was in the streets, I'd handle this dude. Like, that, sometimes that thought come up. But most times, it's the Quran that keep me in check. It'll, you know, when Allah say, let not hatred of a person excite you to act unjust. Or he says in the Quran, Allah love those who deals with equity, justice. So those things keep me in balance. And then it really brings back your teachings, because I know how I feel as a man. And it ain't Muslim. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say, yeah, well, you got to handle it this way. I know first reaction that come up is to handle it a whole nother way. Then that Quran comes. And then study guide comes, because we have mixed feelings and controversy to help you when you actually in something like this. It's very unique. I mean, I wouldn't even have these things or react this way or even deal with him that way if he didn't deal with my wife that way. See, it's a trigger. You deal with her civilly, you ain't ever got to talk to me. You ain't never got to see me. You deal with her in another way, and I'm the front door, and you can't get to her unless you come through me. So, but unfortunately,
it's okay,
though,
Brother Michael. You could go on and say you want to put him on his back. We ain't mad at you.
You're supposed to defend
your queen.
Listen, I'm not even going to lie to you. I tell you, because I told you, we had the confrontation. I mean, he threatened my wife over the email. He said something very crazy, and they was getting ready. We was living in Colombia, and we was getting ready to have the his first visit. So he said something crazy. I emailed him back. I like, I see you Saturday, partner. So I'm waiting in the
Oh my God.
I'm waiting. I'm like, okay, you talking smack like that to my wife, then you do that to me in my face. But he come in with female police officers. I'm like, damn, you an FOI with a female police officer. That just don't look right. And so I'm talking to him like, look, man, you said XYZ, blah, blah, blah. He wouldn't even look me in my face. And when the police officers were there, I was telling them my position. He was trying to get his position out, and they start chastising him in his position. And then for the brother never forget it. The brother came to me. He said, "The brother, police officer." He said, "Look, man." He said, "Look, I don't care about that Islamic stuff." He said, "I'm not disrespecting." He said, "I'm not disrespecting. But the Islamic stuff don't matter." He said, "You're supposed to defend your woman as a man." And he said, "I respect that. As a man, you defending your woman." I had to just let him know, like, it don't matter. And I hate that here we are, you know, both rolling with the Muhammad, but one of them is out of place. One of them is being other than self. And so that looks bad, you know what I'm saying? It just looks bad, and I hate that. But you ain't going to disrespect the wife no matter what your name is. I just not going to happen under my watch. So I wish we could take a different course. I wish we could handle it civil. I know believers who a believer remarried another believer's wife and got that believer's permission to do it, and those believers managed that household together for like 10 years before the sister passed away. I saw it can be done. It can be done if both parties are civil and mature. But when it's somebody that's bitter and they're not trying to reason via the Quran, reason via the Bible, reason just being justice, like, then that puts you in a precarious situation. So for me, I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, I had not thoughts about hurting that cat. I had many thoughts. I'm just glad that I take the Quran and Bible and our teachings, because that actually comes up. Like, when I get to thinking crazy, that'll come up in the head, and I'll be like, damn.
Okay, but as it relates to the bitterness, though, I'm saying that do you think that you, because you mentioned that he doesn't talk to his daughter maybe every 6 or 7 weeks or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's because of the bitterness, or is that just, you know, he's just not a perfect father?
Nah, not at all. I just think it's just not a father. Like, he wants all the goodies of being a father. But he's not putting in the work. And so he thinks, because this is my daughter, then she should respond to me the way she responds to me. And that's just not the case. You got to actually put in the work. Like, you can't run up on a pit bull you don't know and expect to bond with that. You've got to build a relationship with anything in nature. You got to do that even if it's your own seed. So see, it don't seem to connect the dots to him. I mean, he's going to pay for it. He don't know that, but he'll pay for it on his own. But you got to build a relationship. Nobody had to tell me to call the little one and do ABCs and 1, 2, 3s, whatever. And I tell you, I did that every single day as much as I could. When I was in Phoenix and she was in Columbia, we would get on the Connect so I could see them and they could see me. I made an effort to build a relationship, because one of my biggest concerns was I'm transitioning a family, and I'm going to move the family from Columbia to Phoenix, because I'm just not going to live in Carolina. I just can't do it. And Phoenix is a better spot. I have more resources. So this is my intention, but I can't just, hey, guys, here's a family. We're a family, you know, and then the effect that it does on the children. So I made a concentrated effort to build a big relationship with them, just like I did their mother. So when
Brother Mikhail, we know you can talk. Hold on. I want to give somebody else a chance. Thank you, though. Okay, because we're running out of time. Okay, so now on the bitterness part, though, Sister Patricia, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I'm here.
Okay, so I know your situation was a little unique, because I know your children were bitter with you.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, at least your daughter. So, yeah. You know, how did, and she was an adult. How did that bitterness even come into play? And how did it affect the relationship with you and her? Because I'm going to tell y'all why I'm asking this question in particularly. Those of you who know me well, you know I'm a juvenile court advocate, and sometimes I have to sit down with these children who are on probation, and they come to me when they're on their last leg. They come to me when the judge is about to send them to jail in Texas, 15 years and 10 months, or you go to boot camp if you're 15 years and younger. However, when I have to deal with them and when I have to try to pinpoint where that anger comes from, I can't tell you how many times that it goes back to the divorce or either to the breakup or either to the discord between the parents. And I want to know, you know, I'm asking you all, how does that occur? Because at some point, some bitterness had to spill out and spill over into the children when the relationship between the parents and the children change after the divorce, because that should never, ever happen. So what happened in your situation, Sister Patricia?
Yes, ma'am. Well, I was the person who wanted the divorce. My ex-husband did not want the divorce, and I didn't want to hurt him. I mean, I wanted the divorce, but, I mean, he was going to be hurt. He was going to be hurt. So, you know, I don't know if I should say usually, you know, girls are daddy's girls, and my daughter was a daddy's girl, and my son was a mama's boy. So it really hurt my daughter because she felt that I was hurting her father. And all I could do was to explain to her that I was not trying to hurt her father, but that I needed to heal myself. I needed to be a better person than the person that I was, and that I couldn't do it with her father. And so she didn't accept that in the beginning for a while. And I just kept trying to talk to her, you know, about other things. And she had a family of her own at the time. And so she did some mental work on her own, and she was audited, and she got over it. She finally got over it, and she sees that, you know, you do go through difficulties in life and certain situations you just cannot continue to live in. And she finally saw my point. I was not trying to turn her against her father at all, but she did finally get to see that for herself. And my son, yes. You didn't ask, but my son, he just wanted me to be happy. He just wanted me to be happy. So he didn't show much emotion, but I know it did affect him. But his thing was he wants to be happy.
Okay. And Sister Sincere, are your children, I know you mentioned some discord going on there with, I guess, him introducing another individual into the relationship now. But what was it before the other person came into the relationship? What was it like between him and the children?
They were, I guess with him, they love him to life, and they want to keep a relationship with them, and I encourage a relationship with them, and that's the issue right now. Then once they found out the truth on everything that happened, they were really upset with him, and they try to speak with him and let him know, you know, they're very respectful children, so they try to let him know exactly how they feel, but, you know, as of, like, in our marriage, it's always, yeah, okay, and then brushes them off. So that really hurts them, and it really affects my youngest one, even to this day, that he doesn't listen. And I explained to him before in the summer, you know, what you do now will affect your relationship with them later on. But I think the hurt and the pain of him seeing, oh, she's not, like, pondering over me or even thinking about me, she's even moved on and got an FOI, and it really hurts his nerves. Now the girls, not that he doesn't love them, but it's not that he has them around because he loves them so much like that. It's more so, look, I've got it. They're like trophies. So they're starting to see that now, but back then they were kind of upset with him getting the divorce, knowing, you know, the stuff that happened. They were really upset with him not letting them go down south and lying to them about the plans that were made. So it took them a while to get over that. It took me a long time. I'm just recently, even into my marriage and getting audited, I'm just getting over that hurt and that pain because I know it had affected my daughter's relationships, even with Brother Khalil when we first got married, even though they had knew of him before, just the change of the dynamics you know, my middle child, she didn't take to it very kindly in the beginning, but as we spent time together and had our family trips, then she started realizing, oh, wait a minute, this is a cool dude. He's nothing like, you know, my father is saying. So at this point in time, my daughters are like, you know, so many words to be nice about it. Dad's a big liar, and he's using us to get to mom. So that's basically what it is. And then my husband had something he wanted to say, sister, if you don't mind.
Yes. It was directly related, really, to your last question, your previous question. I think since we're talking to a listening audience, you know, there may be those that are planning on getting married, you know, or maybe getting ready to go through a divorce. We don't know. But I think the important thing is that so that you don't have that tension. In an ideal world, you know, the two people would be able to sit down, the husband and wife sit down civilly and say, civilly, how we're going to deal with, you know, this particular break, how we can stay in the children's lives without them feeling the pain or the pinch of either one parent being there and the other parent not being there. I think that there has to be, you know, a transition. And I think what happens most of the time is that, you know, we sometimes we have pre-marriage counseling, but I don't think we necessarily go through counseling when we're getting ready to break up so that we can, you know, avoid the pitfalls that most people deal with because we didn't have someone proper to talk to, or we didn't have a show like this where people could listen in on and say, okay, I don't want to make those same mistakes. I want for us to part. We may not get along. We may not like each other, but for the sake of the children, we're going to work this out to for the betterment of the children. And I think the other thing is that you know, the transition into a new relationship in terms of the children, they have to be around that person and get to know that person, you know, a little bit before you abruptly, you know, introduce this new mate into your life so that they can understand who this person is, how they are. And it definitely helped if the two people that are splitting apart, you know, don't do any you know, give any misgivings about a particular person or anything negative about a person, especially if you don't know them. So I think that would help, you know, as well, especially for those that are out there that are getting ready to get married or getting ready to go through a divorce. You know, think about things. The children are the most important thing when you're getting ready to divorce or go through a breakup, and they're the ones that really suffer in the end if it's not handled properly.
Absolutely. And Brother Khalil just took my next subject matter and went on with it. But okay, I'll find something else, Brother Khalil. Because that one was coming up next. But thank you. And you're absolutely correct. And I'm going to go to Brother Walter. Brother Walter, were your children bitter?
I can't say that they were bitter. I always tried to, you know, ask them what their thoughts and feelings were without interjecting my thoughts and feelings about the situation, you know, more so like just trying to get a pulse on, you know, how they view things. And I never wanted to, like, slant or skew the situation and try to appear that, you know, I was, you know, trying to influence them to feel a certain type of way. But I think that didn't always happen on, you know, the other side of the equation. And, you know, it manifested itself as time went on as they began to get older because my children kind of grew a little bit fearful of, you know, me more so because I was in the nation and still I continued to be in the nation. And, you know, their mother kind of, you know, when she left the nation, she kind of used that as a – you know, like kind of as a weapon that your father does this for, you know, the nation, but he doesn't do this for you and, you know, things of that nature. And it kind of, you know, grew a distance between, you know, two of my children. My oldest one, he was a little bit more, you know, independently thinking and able, you know, to express himself, you know, to where he didn't get influenced by that. But I'm still, you know, struggling, you know, some 12, 13 years later, trying to reestablish, you know, a more plentiful relationship with my two younger sons from that marriage. And, you know, it wasn't so much bitterness on my part because I was like that sleeping volcano. As long as you didn't, you know, mess with me, I'm not going to mess with you. And even when you did mess with me, I kind of just, like Brother Khalil said, and I said in the previous broadcast,
it's always about the children. Every move I made was always about the thought of how would it affect the children and not so much how it affected Brother Walter. So I don't think my children were really bitter, but I just think they kind of grew up with, you know, with a little, you know, difference of opinion, basically.
Okay, and Sister C, Sister Cinquetta.
Yes, ma'am. With my children, especially my two older children, they were extremely bitter. And just like I had said in a previous broadcast, that it was kind of hard to shield them from, you know, what was going on because the whole neighborhood knew. So they couldn't go outside and just play and be with their friends and just, you know, live their lives as children as they wanted to because they would be confronted by their friends or neighbors, you know, saying things like, oh, I saw your dad going over so-and-so house, or I heard your dad was doing this, or, you know, so they were always being bombarded with what was going on. So they became very bitter, very angry. And with my daughter, it affected her greatly when she started to act out, and it's just been a long road for us, even up to this point, and she's 18 years old. And my oldest son, he's 23, and he still has a very skewed view of my ex-husband, and he holds a lot of resentment, you know, for him because of what he did and how he did it. So in my case, it was really hard to shield them from that. But if I could say anything to the listening audience, I would, you know, let people know, if you can shield your children from your own bitterness, do that. Because they are so precious and so innocent. You don't want their spirit to be hurt by your pain. You know, your hurt doesn't have to be their hurt. You know, so that's all I really have to say about that.
Yes, and oftentimes what I have found is that either way, whether it's the man or the woman, they have these conversations with children, and they have these conversations in the presence of their children, talking about the former spouse or the soon-to-be former spouse, and it's negative. And I think people forget in their own bitterness that the child still has to have a relationship with the father and with the mother. And we cannot allow our personal relationship to impact the relationship that the child has established with the parent. But oftentimes we turn to our children, and oftentimes a lot of parents will take out their anger on their children. You know, we've had, you know, extensive abuse cases, you know, that have come up because of divorce. Sometimes it's not always physical. Sometimes it's verbal because they're angry and they're taking it out on their children. And sometimes it's emotional, you know. And, you know, sometimes every time the child does something bad, you know, you just like your father, you just like your mother. And it's always in a negative way. So we have to get away from including our children in our personal lives. Now, sometimes, you know, when things are done publicly, like in your case, Sister Cinquetta, you know, that's different because the parent has an obligation and a responsibility for himself and to protect his children, his or her children. And sometimes it cannot be avoided. And I think that's when it's time to sit down and have an honest conversation about people being human. And I don't care how much you're hurting. I don't care how cheated you feel. You know, even if your husband, even if your children witnessed an extramarital affair or whatever it may have been, still do not talk negative about the parent to that child, because that parent has to be in that child's life. It needs to be, and that child has a right to form an opinion based on their relationship with that parent. Okay, we're going to move on, but before we do, I think Brother Derek is on the line, and Brother Derek is my, I call him my silent partner because he's supposed to be my co-host, but he don't never say anything. So I'm a yield to the distinguished gentleman from Louisiana. Brother Derek, do you have a question for the panel?
Walaikum
salam, sir.
I'm jumping in kind of late. I just got off of work, so I'm still listening right now.
He does that every time.
I'm just being honest.
Okay. All right. Well,
go to your next question, and then I have one.
Okay. Well, I want to get back to what Brother Khalil was talking about, because how can I put this? You know me. I have to be brutally honest. I am not a fan of auditing. I'm just going to put it out there. I'm not, and I'm still studying, so maybe one day I will grasp, you know, a more positive outlook on auditing. But, you know, I'm a counselor, so auditing, counseling, whatever it is, you know, a lot of times it is suggested prior to marriage, but very seldom after divorce, you know, because, you know, some people think that once you go through the divorce, it's a clean slate and you can move on. But then before you start another relationship, you know, you need this premarital or pre-courtship counseling or whatever. But I think that whether it's auditing or whether it is counseling, is it an effective tool to help you get through not the dynamics of what is going on, but just through the coping? Because a lot of times divorce is emotionally tasking. So I'm going to start with you, Sister Patricia. Do you think it should be done, like, as soon as the decision is made that, okay, we're about to get a divorce? Or when do you think it should be implemented?
Well, I think it depends. In my case, I thought for many years, actually, whether to get a divorce or not, years. And so I went through a lot of pain and a lot of anguish while I was still at home with the family, with my ex-husband, and I worked through it on my own. I did receive counseling from my minister a few times, and the auditing took place after the divorce for myself. Actually, a good deal of time after the divorce, because the auditing, well, we know the language, refiled the pain as an experience so that it's not a painful situation. It's still there. It's an experience, but it's not painful.
Mm-hmm.
The auditing should come at a specific point. We did go to marriage counseling at the very end, and my mind was actually made up, and it really didn't help me at all. But I would say the auditing did help after the fact.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Brother Mikhail, what do you think?
I think, you normally have the signs that, you know, there's trouble in your marriage. And I think when you hit those signs, if you guys are not communicating, I mean, I think first try to communicate, but I definitely think you should seek some type of counseling or auditing, one of the two, before you get to that last stage, some type of reconciliation. And then when all that is exhausted, when all of those means are exhausted and your divorce is still permitted, then I think you feel good about your decision because you tried everything, and it just may be that, you know, you guys are growing apart and you got to go. But I didn't do that. But when I got a divorce, but I definitely, in hindsight, wish I would have. And I'm not necessarily saying auditing. I don't know, but some communication with a counselor or someone who's been married far longer than I have and been through it to see if what I'm thinking or feeling is right and do it together. So I definitely advocate that.
Okay. And Sister Sincere?
I would definitely advocate it. I wish we had, you know, I had Dianetics prior to the divorce, and then I know, you know, I probably would not have been in the state of mind that I was in. And, you know, my ex-husband is a lost found. So, you know, with him, you know, he tried a counselor by himself, but he just said it didn't affect him in any manner. And there was some, you know, deep issues in the relationship. But, I think that maybe if there was counseling before we got married, that would have helped a lot, because there were issues and I should have seen the red flags being thrown in my face before we got married, because, you know, he cheated on me quite a bit. And when you think someone's changed and then they come and ask you for your hand in marriage, you think that it'll be fine. But I think that if there could have been, it would have helped me a little bit more. But the issue, and I don't like putting any blame on anyone, but I believe the deep-rooted issue was him and me embracing my Islam again and embracing it strongly. And I just don't think any counseling could have helped that, you know. Maybe it could have, but even after the divorce, we've gone to counseling. We went back in August to try to communicate, because I won't talk to him like that. And the counselor was like, that's it. This is the first and last session. You guys just leave it alone. So, you know, I've tried and I keep peace. But, you know, the auditing part has helped me now just release all the hurt and pain. And, you know, every time I would hear his voice, I would start shaking because it was mental abuse that was going on. But, you know, I think sometimes, for those who are getting married, I would say prior to get counseling to be audited. And, you know, if you're going through a divorce, try everything before you divorce.
Yes, ma'am. And Sister Cinquetta?
Yes, ma'am. I agree with, you know, with all the panel, all the people on the panel has said. If you could, you know, get counseling prior to getting married, it can kind of help you to, like the sister just said, look for the pitfalls that you may be headed for. And while you're married, if you constantly get counseling, not saying that you have a problem at the moment, but I truly believe that it could prevent a lot of problems. But if you are, you know, in a divorce situation, counseling is, I think, a must, as well as auditing, because it helps you to see your way through that situation a lot better. I wish I would have gotten counseling, you know, when I was going through my situation.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, and Brother Walter.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I'm an advocate of everything. Auditing, counseling, preventive maintenance, anything that we could get our hands
praying.
On. Praying, indeed. You know, coming together in these type of forms as married couples and just trying to, you know, keep our marriages and families tight, because it's like we're broken people and we
right.
come from broken parts. And a lot of times we're trying to become whole and we're encouraged to do the right thing as we come into our faith. But a lot of times because of the examples we've been given and seen and just the way we process things, it makes it extremely difficult for us to come together. So I think that we have to take that
Brother Walter?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I'm sorry. Your phone cut out.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know what part I cut out at, but I was just saying, you know, just like
we take the phrase of it takes a village to raise a child, it takes a village to keep a marriage together these days. And sometimes I think when we all take that initiative to help each other, not that we want to be all in each other's personal affairs every day, but just encouragement and support a lot of times can be preventive measures for a lot of us going down these roads that we're going down.
Okay.
This is DJ. Can I say something before you go on?
Yes.
I was going to say, to brother's point, I was going to say, as brothers, I think it's hard for us to do counseling. There's, you know, some of us, there's like that ego involved. And so there's been couples I've talked to, just sharing them with my experience, where the brother, I don't know, it feels like a weakness or vulnerability when you seek counseling. At least that's how some of us take it. So I think a lot of our marriages could be prevented. Divorces could be prevented if we agreed on counseling or some type of talking to. I just know, just in my experience, the brothers in general tend to have a negative look on counseling. And so sometimes we're just stubborn. I know I was like that in my first divorce. I was like, what the hell, I'm going to get counseling for? What are they going to tell me? Wrong attitude, wrong disposition to have, you know? But I wish, because, I mean, you can always learn from other people's experiences, and I'm pretty sure there's people who you may have went through the same thing you're going through and figured it out, but if you're just not open. So I think it's incumbent on the brothers to really embrace that. Like, it's not a sign of weakness when you just seeking knowledge in an area where you're having problems. I mean, we do that for everything else, health, finances, but marriage, I don't know. But I embrace that is what I'm saying.
Yes, sir. Okay, well, my next question, Brother Derek, are you ready? Are you ready with a question? You want me to go on?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I have a quick question.
Okay.
This may have been answered already, but I missed it. I was just wondering what the panel thought about, like, what is the spirit that they think is driving divorce in the nation, internally in the nation, and in the external nation?
That's a good question, Brother Derek.
Because, you know, we're
going to start with the brothers. We're going to let the brothers do that. We're going to let the brothers answer first. Come on, Brother Khalil, what you think?
Yes, ma'am. That's a great question. I would say that one of the things that, you know, allows divorce to happen in any relationship, but especially within the Nation of Islam, this is just my opinion, but I think that the lack of prayer, the lack of study, and when I say that, I mean that the two people, the male and the female, husband and wife, have to sit down and study together. They have to, you know, develop their spirituality. You know, they have to develop their knowledge. And I think that that's one of the things that's lacking in families. It seems simple, but I don't think that most of us do it. We know we always use that phrase, a family that prays together stays together. But how often or how many of us are actually doing that? Because if we develop our spirituality and we understand God, then that would help. And I also think that we're not having, you know, I know that there are efforts out there, especially here on this line. You're doing it, you know, each and every week in some form or manner. I know that Brother Marcus Muhammad is out there, you know, doing things for married couples to come together to learn about one another, to learn what is good, what is not so good, what is right, what's not right. And when I spoke to Brother Marcus during Savior's Day, he said one of the things that disallows us to come together as husband and wife is that, you know, we sometimes, especially as men, we're not able to accept where we're wrong. We think maybe we know it all, or we got this and we understand it all, when we really, we don't. Or we're not open to criticism, or we're not open to listening to our spouse and understanding what she may be feeling or how she may be feeling, just giving a listening ear. sometimes that's all that people need. But I think those are some of the things that we need to work on. We need to work on prayer and study, and we need to work on communicating better. We throw that out there all the time and say, yeah, we need to communicate. Everybody says we need communication in a relationship. But how many of us truly know what real communication is in a marriage? And I think that most of us do not. And if we do, we're not really practicing it. But if we could do that, I think that would save a lot of our problems. And then I think also, you know, coming into a relationship, you need to ask the proper questions before you come into a relationship. Is this the person for you? If you get into a relationship with somebody that is not the person for you, you're going to automatically have problems, or it's going to be problems. It's soon coming after down the line, you're going to have those problems because we don't ask the right questions. We don't ask the strong questions. We don't ask enough questions. You know, am I compatible with this person? Do they believe in God like I believe in God? And especially if you're someone in the nation, you're dating somebody that's outside of the nation, and you're planning on marrying them, you know, you're going down, I'm trying to say this right, you're just going down a wrong road sometimes. And so we definitely need to talk to one another before we get married, and that would definitely help, I believe, alleviate a lot of the problems that we do have. Because most of us always say, well, I didn't know this. But if I'd have known that before we got together, then, you know, we wouldn't have got married. That means you didn't ask the proper questions.
That's right. You better teach. Okay, Brother Walter.
Yes, ma'am. Pretty much everything Brother Khalil has said has a lot of different variables. But just to add on to what Brother was saying, I believe that we need to, be able to understand each other as well as try to, you know, figure out and keep in mind what brought us together and what should keep us together, meaning that if we are praying together and doing these things and studying, we also need to learn how to have some social equality with one another. And sometimes when we get caught up in the dogmatic structure of our lives, a lot of times work, mass, family, a lot of times we forget how to change it up, switch it up, make it a little different. And sometimes it becomes a little frustrating on both parts, if not one part. And, you know, we have to learn that balance of switching things up sometimes and being able to incorporate everything but still keeping a twist in it, you know. And that's something that I struggle with because, you know, I have such a hectic schedule. My wife has a hectic schedule. And a lot of times, you know, we find ourselves pooped out at the end of the week, you know. But we have to learn how to keep that freshness in our relationships. And just to, you know, add on to something that Brother I believe Brother Mikhail, I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing it wrong, but Brother Mikhail.
It's Mikhail.
Mikhail. Yes, man. You know, what my brother said, you know, that ego as a man to get with other men, you know, I've always often had this conversation with other FOI and, you know, in my city as well. And I think that a lot of us take that thing like, man, I got it, you know, I ain't telling you nothing about my marriage or whatever. Not that we are searching for, you know, information for each other's marriage, but sometimes we don't know how to approach certain things when we come into conflict with, you know, our spouses. And, you know, if another brother is level-headed enough that we could take that guidance and, you know, accept that and not appear to look weak or, you know, let our ego get in the way of seeking guidance in that way, you know, we say we seek guidance in Allah, of course, but as Muslims in the Nation of Islam, we know that there's no mystery God, and Allah is in each and every one of us that strive for Him. So a lot of times putting aside that ego and being able to take that right guidance. So that's pretty much a vantage point that I have.
Okay, and Brother Mikhail.
I think what Brother Khalil said was very key, you know, when you're in the marriage, doing those things together, studying and praying. I know that was one of the reasons we failed in my first marriage. But to address Brother Derek, I believe what's fueling that divorce is that first the lack of the person on each part knowing themselves, like not really knowing who they are and what they want, and then we make decisions based on the way we were when we were Negroes, still are, but that's how we choose, how you look, your financial status, all of which is important, but they're superficial. And so we don't, like Brother said, ask the very right questions. And so you moving off infatuation, or what you interpret as love. His brother makes me smile, makes me laugh. And then when that's over and you get to see the real person, you know, it's not what you want. And so we're motivated by that. And in the nation, it's so much pressure to be married. So that was one of the things that happened to me. I got married when I was 21, but I felt the pressure to get married. But there was no, let's say, mass counseling or something that you make people go through to understand marriage. You just know you got to do it, or you're doing it because you want to have sex legally or something. So these are all real motivators that I've seen in my experience in the nation, and usually ends up to a divorce 2, 3 months, 6 months later. Never fails. So it's the improper of really being patient. Like, something I wish learned, and I wish I would have learned when I was younger, and I tell people, Allah says it, those who unable to find a mate, keep chase. Until Allah makes you free from one out of his grace. And so to me, when I read that, it's like, man, if you're unable to find a mate, not because you're ugly or something like that, it just, you might not find the right person compatible to you. It's on you to study self, to know yourself. And so you know what to look for, what you should, somebody that should compliment you. But if you're unable to do that, be patient. And that's the part that we don't do. We don't be patient. And he said, then keep chase. We definitely don't want to keep chase because you have the urge there. It's there. It's real. It takes mastery. Sometimes we fall victim and go out. And so it's improper motivators on why we get married. It looks good, and then 6 months later, it looks bad in the nation. And I didn't necessarily get this scope of it until my wife once, when she was doing research for a book, showed me in one particular city open court cases where it was just so many Muslims. All you saw was Muhammad. It was about 400 Muhammads in like cases against each other, child support. They were divorced. And so that gave me just a whole nother magnitude. Like, we're suffering just like the society is suffering in our nation, in a structure that preaches marriage and one half of faith is marriage. But we're failing, and we're not actually addressing why we're failing, because we're still moving off the wrong motivators. And I think once we get a grip on that, a handle on that, and do what Allah asks us to do, and actually be patient and learn self, we won't contribute to the divorce rate. Because our numbers in the nation, as far as divorce goes, is super high. Too high for Allah's liking, I believe.
Yes, sir. And the reason why I asked the brothers to answer that question, because I'm gonna ask another question along the same lines that Brother Derek asked, because when I did the statistics on black marriages, it said that I think it was 70% of our first marriages fail, and that's the population in the United States, and that 48% of black women are not married. So I'm going to go to the sisters now, and I'm going to ask the sisters this question. Do we quickly become dissatisfied when the finances become difficult? Is that just a turn off, you know, all the love and hope and aspiration you had going in, and, you know, you struggle the first year, you struggle the second year, come the third year, the fourth year, the fifth year, you tired. Is that a motivating force or a driving force for divorce? And I'm going to ask Sister Cinquetta first.
Yes, ma'am. I think when you're talking about, you know, the finances, for me, what would be a deciding factor is, what is the issue that we're having about the finances? Is it that you're just lazy, you don't want to work, or maybe you don't have enough education to keep a decent job? Maybe, you know, you are a hardworking man, but you just can't find, you know, work out there. So I guess it really would depend on
the reasoning behind it, but no, I don't think it's a dissatisfaction where I wouldn't stay in the marriage or I wouldn't marry someone if they didn't have, you know, a certain amount of finances.
Okay, and Sister Patricia, now you're on the flip side now because you looking. So now if the brother's struggling, what you gonna do, Queen? I'm just asking.
Okay, well, let me just say this. First of all, I'm very impressed by the brothers who are on the call tonight because they sound very mature and they sound like they know what they're doing in their relationship. And when the brother spoke about the ego, I think that's very, very important because if a man can't check his ego, it's just not going to work. It's just not good because your ego is not even who you really are. So to answer your question as far as the finances, in a courtship, you would have to find all of that out, where the brother is, where the sister is as far as finances, and I think that should be worked out between the two parties. We should know what is expected, what can we do, what can't we do before the marriage even takes place, if that's, you know, what you want to do. So it would really depend on, you know, the situation and circumstances. If we talk about what we want in the future and, you know, what we have right now, will it work with the finances that we have at this time? We have to work together and communicate. And communicating is important. And a lot of us don't know how to communicate. A lot of us just don't know how. So that's the way I would answer that question.
Okay. And Sister Sunseri.
Well, I've always been an independent sister, and even while I was dating my ex, I had two businesses, or I had a restaurant and two stores. So, you know, at the time, money wasn't really an issue for me as far as a man, and I was just coming into the nation as well. So, you know, I was like, okay, you got me, I got you, we straight. And with my ex, I never really had to worry about anything financially. And once we got the divorce, it had really nothing to do with money, but, you know, to do with other things. But when I, you know, when I met Khalil, you know, we worked, you know, in an activist group together on some films, and, you know, we ran in the same circles. And then once I got to Atlanta, he was actually helping with the move. So I got to know him as a brother, but he was driving around in a little purple little Hyundai, and, you know, it didn't faze me.
With both the airbags missing, the front end bashed in, but I was broke.
Oh, man.
But he was
not
working
purple,
like...
But Khalil, not purple. Please don't say it was purple.
Yeah, it was purple.
It was purple.
It was purple.
Okay. So, you know... The brother was holding down 2-3 jobs, though. So I'm like, all right, well, you know, he's holding it down. So when, you know, the divorce was going through and you know, we started the courtship and he was, you know, he talked to Minister Sharif and Minister Rahman, and they knew how the brother felt about me. And I saw his potential. So I wasn't looking at his wallet. And I seen what he did for me, even off of what little bit he had. So... And even though I was, you know, I was working as a property manager, this man still came through for me when times got hard for me. So, you know, 5 months after we got married and we moved back here, he had a stroke. So we were both supposed to start the same job the day after the day he had the stroke. So I can't take a job now because I have to take care of him, and he was in a wheelchair. So, you know, he's still, you know, through his recuperation and going through everything he had to go through, our finances had really, really struggled, and this was in the beginning of our marriage. So, you know, once we got through all of that and we handled it, it made me love him even more because Allah brought me closer to him to want to take care of him. And I said, Allah, please don't take this man from me. I prayed for him. And, you know, if you take him from me now, I just feel like I would have lost my soul. And the money aspect, it didn't even faze me any. It didn't faze me. I got out here and I worked, you know, and I do in-home tutoring for children from 18 months to 6 years old. So I did that to make sure that whatever we needed in the house, we got. So now we're up on our feet financially and we're doing better. But at that time, it just made me love him even more. So I know we can eat bean soup and wheat bread every other day, and him and I are straight. We're good.
That's right. That's a sister soldier for you right there. Go ahead, old queen. Go ahead, brother. Because I know you grinning from ear to ear. Go ahead, on, brother. I ain't mad at you.
If I can say something right quick, I think that's very important. I mean, through my stroke and through my sickness, she was right there for me and helping me get back to the point that I'm at now. And so it just becomes a thing where, you know, you have to work together and work through any problems and issues and that you have. And, you know, we're not the perfect couple, and I don't think there anyone is. You know, and we still have our struggles and things that, you know, we may disagree upon, but that's just normal. But I think that if you sit down and you talk and you discuss it, then it helps a lot. It helps very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Before we move on to the next question, DJ Black Caesar, are you there?
DJ Caesar.
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Okay. Do we have any questions?
Yes, we do. Let me cut the mic on. 314, go ahead with your question. Comment.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, Brother Kareem. How are you?
I'm fine. All praises due to Allah. And before I ask my question, or actually, it's more of a comment than a question, but I just want to say that I have enjoyed every minute of this broadcast. This is the dialogue we have to have, the minds and the hearts we have to have, so that we can solve our problems as a nation. As the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has stated, that it is a threat to our national security, that disease, divorce.
Come on.
And my comment is this, along with everything the brothers have said, as well as the sisters. I mean, this we got balance here. This is what we got to have. The thing is that it goes back to the question that Brother Derek asked about the spirit that's driving divorce. And the one thing I see as the spirit that's driving divorce is rebellion. As the sister mentioned and said, excuse my language, but I'm going to be raw. Nigga, check your ego at the door. That's real. Check your ego at the door. Okay? Bottom line. Okay. Now, on the flip side, at the same time, yes, sister is the second self of God once you qualify yourself. So, see, we both got to stop with this rebellious attitude, you can't tell me nothing.
Yes, sir.
In the Bible, It states it like this, and a lot of people want to twist this. It'll say, well, wives, submit yourselves to your husband. However, come on, keep reading. It say, husband, submit yourselves to your wives. So we have to be able to see Allah in one another so that we can get along in this journey called marriage. And I've mentioned it before, and I'm going to say this and be quiet because I want to get some more wisdom so that when Allah bless me with a new wife, I can behave in a proper manner. But like I said, I've said this before. We oftentimes say, people will say, well, my previous marriage. There was no previous marriage. There was an attempt at a marriage because marriage itself is a direct reflection, a direct expression of the union between the individual and God himself. That's what a marriage is. That's what a marriage is. So if we break up, it wasn't a marriage. It was an attempt. Sometimes it's a real good attempt, but that's all it was. When it's a marriage, it does not end except as it says, till death do us part. And that means only Allah can end it because he's the only one that can cause me to die. But like I say, I'm going to be quiet now because y'all tearing it up. I'm loving it. We need to read down to 8, 9, 25. I'm going to
Well, thank you so much, Brother Kareem, and thank you for calling in. Okay, listen, y'all, we got like less than half an hour, and I really want to get to this topic, two things in particularly. The new relationship. So, Sister Sinceri, Sister Sinclair, you two sisters are remarried. And Sister Patricia is looking to be remarried. Sister Patricia, my beautiful sister from Cleveland, Ohio, very, very qualified queen. I'm sorry, I have to put this ad out here for you, Sister Patricia, because we're going to get you married this year. My sister is highly qualified, wonderful, beautiful MGT. So she's single, and she's ready to remarry. Now, I had to do this with Patricia, I'm sorry. Okay, so you two have been remarried. Both of you are mothers. How was it introducing the new husband prior to him being the husband to the children? You know, at what point did you do that? Because I know, and I'm going to just tell you what I bore witness to, you know, as soon as the courtship begins, then they want to incorporate the children. And, you know, not to say the children are not disciplined or whatever, but sometimes, you know, the brother can see right off you got some issues, and that's just a real turn off. Instead of him getting to know you gradually and then getting to know your children, whereas, you know, he may have established enough of a connection with you to say, you know what, the young man or the young lady needs a father in her life, and I'm willing to do that. But sometimes it's just right out the door, you know, right at the door. You know, here you go with all your children. And I'm just saying, I've never seen those relationships fare well. So I'm going to ask you, Sister Sinquetta, at what point did you introduce Walter into the relationship with your children?
I introduced Brother Walter to my children once. We both decided that we were definitely going to get married. I didn't want to do it too soon because I know they went through a lot with, you know, me and my ex-husband separating, divorcing, and everything. So I wanted to be sure before I brought another man into their life. And I think, you know, we made a very good decision by doing that because they accepted him and they love him for who he is and how good he is to me. So that's exactly what we did. We waited so we knew he was going to get married for sure.
Okay. And Sister Sinceri?
Well, my girls, they knew Khalil beforehand when they would come down to Atlanta when it was my time with them in that brief period. So he was able, they knew him as, you know, the brother that was with me, and he, you know, made sure I was safe because of, you know, the external things that was going on. So they knew him as a brother in the beginning. Now when the dynamics changed, you know, my middle child, she didn't take it so well because she still had in her mind, you know, mom and dad getting back together. But like I said earlier, you know, once that was all said and done, they were good, but him and I sat down with the girls, and he talked to the girls and explained to them his feelings towards me and, you know, what our intentions were and what his intentions were and how much he cared and loved them. So they had a chance to get to know them, unlike what they're going through right now with their dad. It was kind of thrown on them, this woman. So they're not embracing it, and because of the woman's past, they're really not embracing it. So, you know, I just feel it's important to let that person build a relationship with the children first and bring them around. And I think I remember the minister saying before, if I'm wrong, then, you know, correct me. But if your children don't approve of the marriage, you know, if they're wholehearted against it, I'm paraphrasing, but if they're wholehearted against it, then don't marry them. Because it's,
right.
it's important that your children embrace that person coming into your household because it can cause conflict and confusion. So
yes.
we took the time with them, and he didn't, you know, throw himself on them or try to, you know, overdo it. He took his time, and he let them come to him. And then once that was done, then, you know, their relationships now are great. They have a very, very good relationship with him.
All praises to Tolai. Yes, ma'am. And Brother Mikhail, we know that you spent a significant amount of time with Sister Najima's children, communicating with them. But at what point during the courtship? Was it during the courtship or was it during the engagement after you had decided to get married?
When I started to build a relationship with the children, sis?
Yes, sir.
After we decided to get married. Because, you know, you might not, you might, you know, in the first week or two be ready to do something and then just as the course goes find out, well, this is not for me. And then if you involve the children too early on, it affects them. So I didn't want to do that. So once I made sure we both was like, yes, this is it, then that's when I started to build a relationship with the children, more so the little one than the other two. And the oldest was fine, but he navigated to me very, very quickly, but the middle one didn't, for whatever reason. Even when we was in the same household, you know, the other two would be like, Dad, this, Dad, that. And they did that on their own. I never told them to call me that. It was what they did. But the middle one would be like, Brother Michael, can I do this, Brother Michael? So it took her a while. For whatever reason, I don't know, took her a while to do that, and she did it on her own. But I still would attempt build a relationship, take them to the park or some type of festival or fair or whatever. I would buy them things, talk to them, spend time, play with them, do the things you were supposed to do. And I gradually did that with them. Well, I wanted them to feel easy because I know it could be traumatic, you know, this whole another scenario and whatnot. So I did it after me and Najima made sure that that's what we were going to do.
Okay. All right. And Brother Walter, you having children. When did you introduce Sister Cinquetta?
Well, it was a little different because my children were pretty much grown. My three boys were all adults at that point. And I mentioned earlier, our relationship was kind of estranged. My oldest son was pretty much the one that I had more contact with, but he lived in another state and continues to live in another state. But I mean, he, you know, once you know, he was made aware that his father was in courtship and, you know, possible marriage, and he was very accepting of the situation as well. And my youngest son, at the moment that, you know, me and sister had said that we definitely would marry, you know, I began to bring, you know, him around and, you know, blend and attempt to blend the family. And, you know, it's a pretty accepting situation. You know, it was issues with, you know, his mother, you know, but who's a different mother from my ex-wife. But, you know, it was, you know, it was a little bit of challenges, but things have worked out the better since then.
Yes, sir. Okay. All right. And the second part I want to get to is step-parenting, because I want to find out, is that awkward, you know? And Brother Khalil, in your case, do your the Sister Sinceri children, do they call you Daddy or do they call you Brother Khalil? You know, how is the parenting aspect for you going?
Yes, ma'am. Well, actually, they call me Brother Rashid or Brother Khalil. They don't call me dad. And one of the things is that, you know, her children are a little older. You know, I didn't meet them when they were, you know, 6 months old or 2 or 3 years old. You know, the oldest one, you know, now is 17. When I met her, she was like 14, you know, 10 and 8. So, you know, I don't have that experience of, you know, fostering their growth as, you know, young children or, you know, adolescent or young children, I should say. So, no, they don't call me dad. Now, as far as parenting is concerned, you know, men and women have a, you know, I think somebody said this is Savior's Day. I forget who it was. They have a different way of parenting. And so what I generally try to do, especially because it's rather new and still going through, you know, the divorce stage and, you know, the new fiance on the other side, I try to just kind of lay back in the cut. And fortunately with our children, you know, our three girls are very, you know, well-behaved, and you don't have to do a whole lot of disciplining in that manner. So a lot of times what I do is I leave it up to Sincere, you know, to guide and direct. And what I try to do is if I have something in mind that I think that they should be doing or something that we should be implementing, you know, with them, then I'll just run it by her. And I said, maybe you should introduce this to them. Or I'll run it by her and say, okay, if I introduce it, then she already knows about it and she'll back me in with what I'm saying. So there's no conflict and nothing. What Brother Rashid said is, well, let me go talk to mommy. And they're not like that, but to avoid that kind of thing, I think that the two parents should definitely be on the same page when it comes to disciplining. And I remember Minister Farrakhan saying something at one of the believers' meetings, and I hope I'm saying it right, so I'm not quoting, but he was talking about in his situation, you know, he had the axe, the mother, before he would discipline the child or spank the child, you know, because it's not his child. So he had to ask the permission of the mother if he could discipline the child. And I think that's just, you know, proper. So as far as disciplining, yeah, you know, I kind of leave that, you know, up to her. And there's not a lot of that that has to go on. Sometimes we have to rein some things in, but I usually allow her to do it, and then, you know, I'll share some things with her, you know, after I see what's going on.
Okay. And Brother Mikhail, I know that Sister Najima's children gravitated to you rather quickly, and evidently it was an easy transition for you because it seemed like you were very open-hearted and very willing. But how has that been? And was it awkward for them to call you daddy? You know, how did you feel when they started doing that?
Well, I felt it wasn't awkward, but I felt I've earned it. So when they did it on their own, then obviously it was something I earned by just how I was treated them and whatnot. So it's definitely not awkward for me. As a step-parent, technically I am. But in the case of my wife's ex, it's awkward for him. So I feel like what you normally feel when you're in a family that you start from the beginning, you know, that role that you should feel. Like, I have no awkwardness about me. It's 100% awkward for the brother, though. I can say that. I feel like I don't look at them as stepchildren. I don't pass them off as stepchildren. I don't, that word step don't even come out of our mouth when people are asking me. I treat it like they're from my own. So that's how I've always treated it, and that's how we act around here. But it's not awkward at all for me. And they can tell you that themselves.
Yes, sir. Okay. And Sister Cinquetta, what about your children and Brother Walter?
I think with them, I don't think it was awkward at all, because Brother Walter has such a beautiful approach when it comes to parenting and just helping our children to become better people, that it wasn't awkward at all for, I guess, with my children and him, as well as his children with me. Like you said, his three boys are older, you know, they're grown, so I may not spend a lot of time with them, but when I do speak with them or anything like that, they're so mannerable and polite and don't have any problems, you know, any awkwardness or anything like that. And I give a lot of that credit to my husband.
Mhm. Yes, ma'am. So when the children come together, have they ever been together, all of them, Sister Cinquetta?
No, they have not. Because I have grown children. His children are grown. They're pretty much, you know, out doing their own thing. So no.
Okay. All right. Well, the other thing I want to get to, which is not my idea, so please don't blame me, but I just want to bring the point home on behalf of a listener that asked me to address this. How is it, and I don't know if any of you have ever experienced this, but how awkward or difficult or whatever you want to title it, would it have been or was it if the ex-spouse was in the same mosque? And I'm going to start with Sister Sinceri.
Well, praise be to Allah, I didn't have that problem, so you can move on.
Okay, but what if?
I do know sisters who are in that predicament, and it's very uncomfortable because there may be a brother in the mosque who wants to court that sister, and because of the ego, and, you know, I've learned from Dr. Dyer, he says ego is the exiting of God's order. So when you have brothers or even sisters who are, you know, when they have that ego and they'll, you know, like threaten the other person and they will do things to kind of sabotage that couple from, you know, courting or even getting married. And I've seen it where, you know, it's broken up some courtships because of it. So I think Allah was never having to deal with that situation. And, you know, I know Khalil won't leave me, inshallah, but if he does, he's going to have to move because we can't be in the same city.
Well, Brother Khalil, now that's what you call being on lock. You on lock, brother. You hear me? You can't
right,
go nowhere.
I want to say something on that right quick if I could, because my brother is, you know, in a situation on, you know, both ends. And it's very, very, on one end, it's very good. Him and the brother get along. I'm cool with the brother. And, you know, it's a mutual respect with everybody. Hey, you know, it's a new relationship thing. People have moved on, and it's great. But then on the flip side, you know, I can see how that can be, you know, very difficult. So I would think that, you know, when you have a situation like that, you know, within the mosque, since we're talking about the Nation of Islam, I would imagine that, you know, if possible, you know, I would imagine that a minister or somebody should intervene to be there to kind of, you know, bring the parties together to make sure that everything is kosher, as they say in old school, copacetic, so you don't have any problems. But, yeah, I think that we have a lot of that going on in our nation right now, and so I would like to be able to hear more on how people are dealing with that kind of situation.
Okay, because I know brothers got 2-3 wives in the mosque. So it's crazy. Brother Walter?
Yes, ma'am.
Same mosque with ex-wife and new husband and new husband number 2 maybe. And how would that fare with you?
Well, it could be messy based on the individuals. I know that for my particular situation, I didn't quite have it like that, but in a similar way I did. Sister Cinquetta's husband was in the mosque at one time, and we actually knew each other. But out of respect, you know, for him, it was a thing where we didn't, like, you know, get together, you know, immediately. It wasn't no immediacy thing that happened years down. And, you know, when we did decide that we were going to get married, you know, I did seek the brother out, you know, to let him know that this was, you know, what I was going to do. Not looking so much for his approval in a sense, but just out of respect as my brother, you know, to let him know that, you know, I'm going to be a part of your children's life, you know, your ex-wife,
of course, not that it really matters, you know, you all have moved on and resolved it, but, you know, just trying to submit the, you know, the goodness of a brother to let him know. And that went very well. You know, I love the fact that, you know, my wife and him have such a beautiful relationship as exes, you know, and, you know, there's no tension. You know, we're able to sit down and discuss things, and, you know, it's just a beautiful situation for me. But I do know that it is messy. I know some people that's living like that right now, and, you know, it can kind of, you know, ugly.
Wow, yes, sir. Okay, and Sister Cinquetta?
I think a lot of that's not the case with us. However,
okay.
I do. Hello?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Okay. I do think that it would be really awkward or hard for me if his ex was still in the mosque, only because, you know, there's certain things that I know about her and certain things that she does that I don't particularly care for. It would be kind of hard. I know it would be hard for me not to want to say something, you know, to her. You know, I don't know how that relationship would be. But, yeah, it definitely would have been awkward if she stayed in the mosque for me.
Okay. And Brother Mikhail?
Hell no. We couldn't do that. Not the way this dude is. Keep it
real. Keep it real.
The very first time he ever made contact with me, he emailed me, and it's my very first time talking to the cat, and he's slandering my wife, giving me all kind of reasons why I shouldn't marry her. So already we starting off at the wrong foot. So I'm so all praise due to Allah, we not in the same minds. Like, that have been real hard. And I'm not the type of person to give you the greetings if you an enemy to me. Like, I don't do that. Like, you'll know exactly we ain't cool. And so we could be. It could be. I mean, I'm serious. We could be, but I'm not. If y'all just knew what I've had to endure, like, no, sir. Hell no. I'm glad he's on one side of the other country. He on one side of the country, and we on another. And I'm glad that, like, man, we don't have to be that way. I mean, like I said, my favorite verse in the Quran is Surah 555. That's, you know, Allah and Messenger and the believers are your true friends. So I really do believe that. But that's just not his premise. So I'm cool with a super cool spell with all caps. Cool.
Okay. Thank you, Brother Mikhail. Sister Patricia, now I know that, you know, you're looking, but what is, you know, your future husband, what if his ex-wife is in the mosque?
I don't know how that will work. I know.
Okay.
When I was first divorced, and mind you, my husband was a lost child, and he never registered. He would come to the mosque every once in a while. And the brothers got to know him a little bit. And it's interesting that two brothers told me after I was divorced that they were interested in courting me, but they wouldn't because they knew my ex-husband.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay.
And you know, but you know, coming from my 45, I'm gonna tell y'all. You know, I've seen it, and it just—it's very awkward. You know, not so much amongst the children, but definitely amongst the sisterhood, and not even so much in the brotherhood. I mean, but the sisters have a tendency to kind of wear it, you know, like a mask. Like, you know, when he walks in, him and his wife, and you see the eyes cut, and you see the facial expression change, you know, because here's my husband of 10-plus years and father of my four or five children, and here he is walking in with his wife, and I'm single, and I have custody of all these children. I've seen it, and it's just not a pretty sight. I don't know what we as a nation can do besides rise above emotion and deal with that and accept the fact that the relationship is over. Want for your brother and sister what you want for yourself and move on. And I think that is a display of showing that you're still harboring resentment and anger. So get some counseling, get some auditing, move on. Let's live as one family in peace and in love and in unity. And we are out of time, but I want to say thank you to my very distinguished and so uplifting panel. You all were excellent tonight. Thank you, Brother Khalil and Sister Sinceri and Brother Walter. This was your brainchild, I hope. As your big sister, I have done you justice.
Praise be to Allah.
I'm going to conclude on this subject because I don't want to talk about divorce no more. We need to be talking about marriage, but I'm glad that we were able to do this, and Brother Walters, and especially for you, I hope it helped in your goals that you wanted to get this information out here. And thank you to your beautiful wife, Sister Cinquetta. Thank you for joining us for all 3 weeks being here. And I don't know if you missed your martial arts class or not, but go and get back to it because you might have to take Brother Walter in a minute.
Yes, baby. Thank you for having me. Thank you for the opportunity. I really enjoyed myself.
Yes, oh, yeah, ma'am. But that don't mean it's over. Y'all got to come back at some point. So
don't
think you just getting away. Okay, you know, you can't come on here once. You can't even come on here three or four times. You know, you family now. So once you come on, you family. I have to be able to call on you whenever. And Brother Brother Mikhail, you've been on here a number of times, and I really hate that Sister Najma could not be here with you, but I will let her know that you represented both of you very, very well. And your name is Mikhail when you come on this show. Don't forget that, all right?
Yeah, you're rebellious. Yes,
ma'am. Okay. And my dear, beloved Sister Patricia, who has been here many times before, but she also endured this issue for the last 3 weeks. And so, Sister Queen, thank you so much for hanging in there with me. And let me put you on Front Street and expose you. I'm trying to get my sister married. I'm just letting my brothers know. My sister from Cleveland, Ohio, is qualified. Okay? Qualified. She is the captain of the MGT. You don't get no more qualified than that. Come on now. Somebody talk black to me. What you talking about? Y'all sitting up here letting her pass if you want to, missing out on all that good bean soup and stuff. Y'all tripping. You better marry my sister. Okay. And on a sad note, we're going to end. Well, not on a sad note. We're going to have a celebration of life for our beloved Brother Reuben, known as Brother Reuben Real Thoughts Muhammad on Facebook. Brother Reuben Muhammad of Muhammad's Mosque number 45, long-term soldier in the Nation of Islam, head of security for Southwest Regional Representative Minister Robert Muhammad, will be laid to rest on Saturday, March the 23rd. I don't know how many people from H-Town are on the line or anybody that's interested in traveling. I just want to let you know that the services will be on Saturday morning, March the 23rd. There will be a viewing from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., and then the services will begin promptly at 11 o'clock. For those of you who may not know Brother Reuben, of course, he shared publicly with us for almost a year his battle with pancreatic cancer. Allah saw fit to take our brother home March 12th of this year. May Allah be pleased with him. He was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful spirit. He brought so many people together just on Facebook by sharing his story. But I feel privileged and honored because he trained my my sons is Junior Fruits, and he was just a loving and gracious brother, and he had a smile that would warm your heart. So original salute to our dear brother, Ruben Muhammad, and may Allah be pleased with him. And I'll leave you all as I came before you in our nation's greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum. One nation, one love. Good night, y'all.
Wa alaikum salam. Good night, Queen. Blessings.
Praise Allah. Yes, ma'am.